Here we go. Oh my God, y'all. I wish I would just look at my hair. I'm just like, I didn't even comb it. Usually I comb my hair for you guys. I was like going from one thing to the next. And then I've been in the wrong damn room wondering, where is everyone? Isn't some of the Queen's Club coming tonight? It's been a day.
Can you see me?
It's like you're in a tunnel.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wait. Can you see me now?
I can see you now. Yeah, I was like, you're sitting in the dark.
It's so romantic or scary, whichever one you want to call it.
It's kind of scary.
Well, here's the most ironic thing. I'm in a restaurant with my husband on it, and my alarm went off. I went, oh, I got to go talk to Corinne.
Oh, wow.
So I'm in
you're going to run in there and eat 2 to 2.
Well, that's why I'm calling you.
All right. Well, let's talk about 2 to 2 and how awesome it's going to be when you eat dinner tonight.
I said, he says, you're leaving me? And I said, yes, I'm leaving you. So
I'm gearing up for my meal. Damn it. Leave me alone.
I know. And I said, well, you know, I'm getting close to my 2 already and we've just had salad. And he goes, well, you can pack it up and take it home. And I said, and I will. And he goes, oh, you will? I said, yes, you watch me. So I'm going to.
Well,
So this is one of those spontaneous, we were out talking to a financial planner. He said, let's go out to eat. I said, okay. And I put that on my plan. So here's my question. I have, since February 2nd, written my 24-hour plan, and it's been the most amazing thing. And I did it because I put my coffee machine upstairs in the guest room bathroom. Okay. And by doing that one thing, I ended up, then I'd go into my little yellow room and I would write my 24-hour and I would assess and I'd do my recovery worksheets, and it's been amazing. Yes. And it really works. And now I don't be mad, but it took me a whole year to understand realistic plan.
I am not mad at you. That is the hardest concept. And I've taught it so many times now that I think I'm really good at teaching it. It took me a long time of coaching you guys through it to really understand what your problems were around it. So don't apologize.
Yeah, because we thought it had to be perfect plan, Weight Watcher plan, you know, diet plan, and that's not what you meant. So now I know that I can eat whatever I want within 2 to 2. And my goal and what I'm now working on is waiting until I'm hungry and stopping when I'm satisfied. It's so simple, but what I do is, last week I had the flu. I had a fever of 102, and I only ate when I was really hungry.
Okay.
And then I stopped because I was going to throw up if I kept eating, so because I was sick. And I realized, oh, this is easy. And I lost like half a pound every other day. And it was just like, I wasn't exercising. I still haven't gone back to exercise because I'm still sort of sick. And I know this is the answer. I know this is the answer. So my question is, how do I remember to do it? So I'm at work today and it's lunchtime and I'm in an elementary school. I'm a speech therapist and it's time for lunch. And I'm halfway through my lunch. And I went, I didn't even stop to think, am I hungry? And I wasn't any, so I stopped and because I was no longer hungry, but that's what I want. How do I remember to wait till I'm hungry and stop when I'm at a 2?
It's super easy. It's just going to take some time to reprogram your brain. So it's like, saying, you know, how do I just suddenly, like, it'd be like me saying, we're all going to, like, what, are you left-handed or right-handed?
I am left-handed.
So if I said, you're going to start writing right-handed from now on, and you'd be like, all right, so tell me how to remember how to do it and be really good at it tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's the same expectation. Like, we don't think it is, because the reason why we don't think it is because we compile emotional drama around it. Like, but I really want to lose weight and I really want to do this. It'd be like saying, but oh my God, Corinne, I just want to be such an expert penmanship person. And like, I never want to have to make a mistake and everybody's going to think I'm a sloppy writer. Like, none of us would have that much drama over having to take the time to learn how to switch our non-dominant hand to our dominant hand. It's the same thing with eating. You're going to have to just like set up little small things to practice. Just like you'll say, all right, so now because I'm going to be checking in with myself, I'll eat with my non-dominant hand. That will slow my process down enough for my brain to kind of catch up with, asking myself,
that's a great idea.
Am I ready? And then the other one is just trying to remember as often as possible. And if you don't remember, to go back and ask yourself before you eat, am I hungry? Like literally just saying, am I hungry? And if you're not, then you have like, you either don't eat and there's no drama, or you have drama and you, that's where you work on. That's what you want to be like, okay, so why do I really need to eat when I'm not hungry? And you have like good thought work to do there. But it's a lot of it is just you guys cutting yourself some slack and just being like, I am not going to like remember to ask myself, am I hungry before every single meal when I haven't been doing it at all or I've rarely been doing it. It's like remembering when you get, it's like you said, like if you get halfway through your meal and you realize you didn't even ask the question, you don't, like most of us will drop into, I'm never going to get this. I'm not ever going to be able to lose weight if I can't even ask my fucking question, am I hungry? Right. It's like, that's a waste of time. The best thing is to say like, okay, I forgot this time, but was I hungry when I started?
Right.
Do I remember if I was hungry? What could I do in the future to remind myself, like breaking the process down into how to like make it a habitual thing versus rather than making it something's wrong with me. I'm never going to get this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's really two parts. It's am I hungry? And then the really hard thing is stopping when there's like five bites left and it's just salad, so it's good for me, or it's really delicious and I want to keep eating it. So that's a second thing to work on. And I have to do those recovery worksheets. Damn, I learn a lot of,
you know,
a lot of crap about that.
I do too. And because I still do a lot of this work. One of the things that it really has helped me with, I will say of all the habits that we have, the hardest one for me is stopping.
Yeah.
That's always my toughest. And I know it goes back to just early conditioning, you know, and it's, I just have decided it's probably one of those things I'll have to consciously work on for a long, long time, because about the time I think I've got it licked, I slip back into, woo, I'm the queen. I'm so healthy. I should just finish this good salad. And you know, like it's easy for me to bring that back in. So one of the questions that really helps me is I like to ask myself, I just want to see how uncomfortable it will be to just leave a little bit behind. Like, I look at it from a, like, I just want to get a little curious about it versus, oh, I hate having to throw this away. There's such a different like energy behind it.
Yeah. I remember it was like around April, maybe last year, you did a week of, today we're going to leave two bites behind. And the next day we had to eat. I forget, there were all these rules. Those two bites, oh my gosh, you would think we were going to die if we didn't get to eat the last two bites in that bowl. It's just terrible. So then I got to work on that. Well, what am I thinking? You know, is it, I have to see the bottom of the plate because my grandmother was so proud, or, you know, like, what is that all about? So yeah. All right. Yeah, well, I feel better. Thank you.
Like for me, I don't even go back to what is it all about. I just assume I learned it at some point and that's good enough for me. Cause I know how I learned it. I learned it just being broke. When we ate, it's like, eat up. I mean, it was always told us, eat up. You know, like I can remember one time there was like a running joke where we all tried to see how full we could get.
Yep.
Like my whole family. And then another time we had free coupons. I forget. It was like some nice restaurant. And we, like, I swear to God, I ate till I was sick. Like we all did because it was free. You know, so like I know where it all started. And the thing about it is I don't mind you guys figuring out where it started if it allows you to be like, oh, I see. But if you do it and you use it against yourself, like, see, my bitch ass mama should have done better. You know, like if it does that, then it's a waste of time.
Time to move on.
Right. Exactly.
It doesn't matter why anymore. Today is today. Move on.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, I feel much better. Thank you. I'm just going to keep on. I'm going back in that restaurant and I'm going to
put some food home.
I can bring it home, but that'll be a meal for probably the next 5 days because they give you so much food. So
where are you at? What restaurant are you at?
Oh my gosh. Well, it's this Italian restaurant in McMurray, Pennsylvania, which is way far away from my house. It's like an hour away in the south of Pittsburgh, PA. Okay. And it's an old schoolhouse. It's really cute. And we just, we went to a financial planner to see if I could retire. And he told us we're fine. And we said, well, let's go celebrate. So I'm like, all right, but I'm not even sure I'm hungry yet. And I'm going to talk to Corinne.
Well, tell your husband hello.
I will. He's like, I can't believe you're going to leave me and go outside and talk to Corinne. I'm like, yeah, I am.
Tell him this is what we call a rare opportunity.
Right, yeah, exactly.
All right, well, have a good one.
I'm coming in the fall. I cannot wait to see you again. And thank you for everything. You're just changing my life in amazing ways. So thank you.
Thank you, lady. Have a good night. Bye.
You too. Bye.
All right. That was a good call. I enjoyed that one. Tanya, don't rain on my parade. Are you here? Nobody can have a bad day. I don't know if anybody's been following me all day, but I have practically, I've cried every call. I did a Facebook Live, I cried. I cried on the noon call. I have just been a hot fucking mess all day. You only have good things to say, right? No problems?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes. You're having an amazing day and you just want to celebrate with me?
I'm having an amazing day and want to celebrate. So I'm on for the rare opportunity reason.
Yes.
I saw in the Facebook group this appointment got canceled. And then when I went to the website, it was still there. I was like, I don't know what I'm getting coached on, but we're putting something in these boxes.
That's awesome. Well, good. This is brightening up my day. Can only, like somebody said, I've been with you all day. If anybody's been following me today, they're probably like, they're probably like me, like, like 8 o'clock, never going to get here. Well, what do you want to talk about?
So I just, you know, I feel like PMP has kind of brought everything together for me. So it's allowed me to take all the things that I've learned just like over life and then apply it to food. And so I get it. And it's still hard. And I'm careful about using that word because I don't want to use it for an excuse to do something that doesn't get me the goal. But I guess I feel like I can envision the future self. I still feel the doubt creep in every now and again. I try to catch it, redirect it. I just went back and did module 5. That worked out great. I feel like I have a good accountability group that, you know, we share stuff, we motivate each other and help each other kind of push forward to the next step. Right now, I guess I'm getting to a point in life where I'm starting to feel a little bit overwhelmed. I'm still learning how to plan my life.
Okay.
So I grew up very poor as well. I now work in a corporate world and am, you know, upper management and doing all that. But I didn't learn the planning skills as a child. So I'm learning them now.
Good.
And so every now and then I just get overwhelmed because the things don't come naturally and I'm catching myself here and there. And so as I'm working through it, one of the things that I heard was, plan your exceptions. If the reason why you don't want to do your exceptions because you're afraid it's going to impact your weight loss, you need to do it anyway.
Yes.
But at the same time, I sometimes wonder because I'm like, well, sometimes I don't want to do it because it is going to impact my weight loss.
But here's the thing. If you're not going to do it because it's going to impact your weight loss because you're so highly motivated right now.
Yeah.
And like, so like, man,
and it's positive.
I don't bother with it. Like I'm loving my results. And that is like a different energy than someone who says, I'm terrified of exception because my weight's probably going to go up a pound or two. And I don't know if I can handle that.
Oh, like, well, I don't really care about that. Like my weight goes up a pound or two throughout the month, every single month. And then it comes right back down.
That's what I want you guys to see is like, I make people take exceptions when they're afraid of an exception. Like,
okay. Like
when people say things like, it derails me, it's too much for me to handle, I can't control myself. Like an exception meal can't do anything to you. It's just a meal. That's all it is. But when we think, when we overeat, it's because of the exception, then I know for sure you've got to practice because there's thoughts and feelings that come between the overeat and the exception. And you're avoiding your thoughts and feelings about the exception
Right.
And blaming the exception. That's why I throw you into the fire and be like, you have to get to where you can eat anything and feel normal about it and feel good about it and always be pursuing the best part of you.
Right.
Like, you should be able to gain weight and feel good about it.
Yeah.
Like, not like sit there and be like, oh my God, it's weight gain. This is the best day of my life. But it should be like, I got this.
Right.
That's okay.
That's super helpful.
Yeah.
Because I feel like, and I'm trying to kind of deal with that. I've gone back to more intensity at CrossFit. And so I'm starting to feel the constant physical pain. And so, you know, I'm trying to balance the, I recognize I'm going to gain some weight, but at the same time, it's not an excuse to eat more.
Right. That is like the mindset you want. It's just like, you know,
okay.
Like I'm working out hard. Sometimes when you first start working out hard, your body has to hold on to some weight while it's doing right. other amazing things, preparing for a big like fat dump.
Okay.
You know, I get so frustrated with you guys when you start doing something amazing like CrossFit or running or any kind of exercise.
Right.
And you get wigged out because the scale goes up a little bit. I'm like, nobody gets fat because they become an exerciser. People gain weight when they become an exerciser because they eat with exercise as a grand ass excuse to eat. Yeah, that happens a lot.
Right.
If your weight goes up for like a couple of weeks or 3 weeks because you're brand new to working out, it's like, welcome to a fat dump. Like, that is the way that the body works. It's got to tear the muscle up, and every muscle fiber, and you have like millions, y'all, it's going to hold on to water. Like, think of a dry sponge. You know how it's just like sitting there like this and you throw water on it and it swells up and it looks all plump and beautiful and it does things.
Right.
That's your muscle. The second you go in and you work out and then you pour water on it, you have made like all these micro tears, and the water goes in so that it can like get to work on burning fat and repairing muscle. The body has to work harder and do things. But in the interim, you ain't a dry sponge. You are a heavy sponge.
Right.
And you're
this is like so appropriate.
Yes. And it's,
I literally told my group this morning, I'm like, I feel like I need more water than the 64 ounces now because I'm working out more. I think that it'll just make me feel better.
The more you work out, the more water you need to drink. I'm going to tell you, especially if you're doing CrossFit, guys, this is my Queen's Club. You start lifting the weights, you better get on that water, because what I hate is when somebody is really getting into the weights and like, God, giving themselves the gift of muscle, and then they don't drink their water. Your muscles can't do jack shit without the water. Like, it's like throwing away your workout if you're not going to drink your water. You might as well just not gone. That's how important it is. And if you really love being sore, then don't drink your water, because then you can extend it for about 5 extra days.
Like, it hurts. Like, I literally got up at 1 o'clock in the morning on the foam roller rolling so I could go back to sleep because I hurt so bad.
I've been just waiting, like, for a few weeks. I've kind of been half-assing some. I've been so on that Peloton. I'm just, like, not doing my weights like I normally do, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I'm doing my weights, but, like, I'm not doing my weights. You know what I mean? I'm like,
and that's exactly what I've been doing.
Let me just grab the 20s again. Like, I'm not pushing myself. Now that my quad is sprained, I'm just like, I can't wait. It's going to be a leg day. So I'm looking forward to that. You're doing fine. You're doing fine. I don't have any, like, your thought work's on point. You're feeling what you're supposed to be feeling. You're supposed to have some doubt. Like, all that is supposed to happen as you're changing. That's just, you know, the thing about it, guys, is that it's not all going to, like, when you said, there's something you said that's so important. I know it's going to be hard, but I don't want to make it harder. The hard part is allowing doubt to come in, like noticing when you're like, I don't know if I'm leaving out my exceptions for the right reasons. I think I am, but like, that's the hard part. What you guys do is you do hard. Like, you go into this isn't working. I'm never going to be able to lose weight. Oh my God, what did the scale do? Like, that is the hard that I want to teach you guys to leave out of the process. The hardest, like when we were talking on the last call with Julie, you know, what's hard is remembering to ask yourself if you're hungry.
Right.
You know,
before you get started.
When you make it harder is when you make it mean, when you forget the question, that you're a loser.
Right.
Let's just leave that part out.
Exactly, right?
All right, I need to do that. That was a
Thank
good
you
one.
So much. You're All right, welcome. Have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Oh, I am sweating like a freaking pig over here. Like, oh my God. All the Josie Marion's coming off. Cheryl. Don't forget, when you come on, bottom left, join audio. Or under your name, you should be able to click unmute. Now, that's what I'm telling you, Betsy. The unmute button is no longer available for me.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. I can. Hey, lady.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm fabulous.
I'm like seeing all my friends tonight.
I have notes.
Oh my God, you came prepared.
I'm prepared.
Look at you. Wow. Yeah. All right. Well, what would you like to do with this rare opportunity?
I would like you to help me with determining my goal weight.
Okay.
So I listening to, I think it was the podcast last weekend. I'm going to quote you because you said, how do you know if you're happy or if you don't want to go through the discomfort again?
Yes.
And that's where I'm at. So I've lost just over 30 pounds.
Okay.
I'm working out. I just came from the gym, as you can tell. working out 6 days a week, pretty hard, taking classes, getting very toned, muscular. So I had set my weight goal for 125.
Okay.
I've been at 140-ish for 13 months now.
Okay.
With that thought that I want to get to 125, and I keep trying. I lose some, I gain some, I lose some, I gain some. But most recently, I've just this past month, I lost another inch and a half around my waist.
Okay.
From a new class that I'm taking. And so I'm wondering if my 125 is unrealistic. And is that just a bad thought I'm having?
Yeah, I wouldn't call it unrealistic. I would just decide, do you want it or not?
That's exactly it. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, so I wouldn't waste time trying to figure out. Go ahead.
Well, I'm happy where I am, but am I quitting on myself?
I don't know. Are you?
I don't know. And part of me wonders if I say, okay, I'm happy where I'm at. I'm going to focus on the workouts. I'm doing the basics. I've been doing my 24-hour plans for months and months and months. I'm struggling with overeats. That's why. Struggling probably is a strong word. I do recovery sheets for them.
Let me ask you this. If you cut out your overeats.
I feel like I'm doing everything right. I'm hoping this overeating course is. I probably would lose some more.
Okay. Why don't we just focus on working on those overeats and not get so caught up in the number? The number is just like a guidepost. Like, I'm either going to keep losing weight or I'm not. Right?
Right.
The real issue is the overeats. Mm-hmm. Like, why are we still overeating?
Right. It's a good question.
Why are we?
A couple of the negative thoughts or thoughts I have that I am trying to turn into positive ones are I haven't been below 138 years. I can't get below there. I wrote some of them down. I think I often say to myself, well, I'm gaining so much muscle, I'm not going to be able to get to lose the weight more. And
let's just throw that one out. Just be like, okay. I work out. I'm not gaining that much muscle.
Okay. The one is, it's the discomfort. I think I don't want to give up some of the things that I'm eating.
That's what I wanted to ask you, because here's the thing. You need to figure out, like, what do you make it mean? Like, if you wanted to weigh, let's just say, what do you weigh now? 140-ish?
140, right around there.
Let's say
140. And I'm 5'2".
Okay, let's say you weigh 140 and you want to, let's say we're just going to get to one, let's go for 135 first. We're going for 135. That's okay. Going to be the next goal, right? To mm-hmm. lose 5 pounds, what do you make it mean to lose 5 pounds? What is, like, what's stopping you from being that person is the way you're defining the work involved to lose 5 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you keep saying, but I'm happy here. That's always a warning sign to me that somebody says, yeah, and to lose 5 more, I'm going to have to go to unhappy land.
Right. It's exactly the thought I have. And I know that's a block in my brain.
Yeah. Could you lose
that's why I'm here
and still be really happy?
Of course.
On the way. Not the 5 pounds makes mm-hmm. me happy. I can be thrilled with the process of losing 5 pounds.
Yes. And
here's how that would work. Like, I think you need to, like, open your brain up to lose 5 pounds and to do it in a way that I love, that challenges me, but is not, like, taking me out of my happy place and all this other stuff. It's literally going to be the dip. Like, you're overeating because you're convincing yourself you're happy. I think you're happy now. I think you've convinced yourself you can't be happy and losing weight at the same time.
You're probably right.
That's where your work is.
Mm-hmm.
It's such an interesting concept because I've been like, you know, I know what y'all probably think, what is Corinne like? Find a big pillow in her house and just sit there and think all day? Because I'm always like just thinking concepts, you know? And mm-hmm. I've been thinking about this when I was losing weight. In that time, I was so happy. Like, I literally was. And it wasn't when I reached my goal. It was like, I think about the process part. And it was one of the first times that I thought on purpose and actively to love the life I was building, to love the things that I was willing to do for myself, to mm-hmm. sometimes say no to things when I wanted it. But I would look at it and I would say, like, you know, I'm saying no this time because I just really want to. Like, I just want to show myself I can. And it wasn't big ass no's. I'm talking about going to IHOP with Chris, and instead of getting a side order of pancakes, getting whole wheat toast.
Mm-hmm.
I still got my big ass omelet. I mean, it was just like all the little things. Like, I would just be like, I think I'm the person who goes this time and doesn't get a pancake. You know, like, and I would just get mad myself. And I think that's one of the things that you guys forget to do is to, when you're losing weight, you focus on all the things that are going to be so hard and difficult, and you forget to focus mm-hmm. on the parts that are going to amaze you about you.
Right.
And the things that are going to thrill you.
And I think I did that as I was losing the weight. I'm a completely different person than I was when I joined. I do a lot, just going to the gym. I mean, I was never an athlete, and I feel like I'm an athlete now. I love going to the gym. I miss it if I don't go. I've made a lot of great friends at the gym. So anyone that is scared to go to the gym, and that was me the first day, and now I need it in my day. And I've made friends. And it was happy coming down. And for some reason, I settled here, and I haven't pushed myself further.
Because you're afraid you're going to lose the happy to trade for hard.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right.
A lot of people do this when you're getting closer and closer to the goal because you're so thrilled with yourself and stuff, and you're able to, you know, like, it's like, what do you think you're going to have to give up in order to lose 5 pounds rather than, well, what if I didn't have to give up anything other than these overeats? Right. What if mm-hmm. the only thing that really was standing in the way of me and one more weight goal was literally cleaning up my emotional eating, the little bit of emotional eating. So a lot of you like to hang on to that little bit of emotional eating, the entitlement eating.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to eat this way, and now I eat this way eating. It's like, mm-hmm. well, what if you just did a little bit more work on some of that stuff?
Maybe leaving some bites behind.
Yeah, like, brainstorm for yourself. Go to the Queen's Club and brainstorm this, because there are a lot of people like who are going to be just like you in there. And mm-hmm. just, If we were going to easily all lose 5 pounds this month, what would we all be doing?
Okay.
Like the easiest way, what are the smallest things we would be changing this month that we're doing? Like, where's the margin that we all have? Everybody has margin. I have margin. And then sometimes it the answer really is, like for me, it's like I can always tell when I'm hyper-focusing on weight and I'm using that to distract me from something more important to work on.
Mm-hmm.
And then every now and then there's that. It's like, no, you don't need to lose any more weight. You need to kind of take a pause sometimes. But there's some other area of life that hyper-focusing on your weight, I see this happen sometimes in maintenance. That people want to keep a weight problem because then they don't have to work on other problems in their life.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
It doesn't sound like you. You sound like you have defined losing 5 to 10 more pounds as I have to lose my happiness,
exactly,
go through the fire, burn my skin off, and then I can be happy again. It's like, what if we can just enjoy the process?
Right.
If you can and define the next, like, think about your athlete mindset.
Right. And trying to fuel my body versus, and I know I can be an emotional eater. And I know I love my sweets. And I think part of that is I want to be that person that can eat that chocolate cake every day. And it doesn't have to be a piece of chocolate cake. It can be the teeny tiny little peppermint patty and I would be happy. I don't want to give up my sweets.
Yeah. And I don't think you have to. I don't think anybody has to. I think you need to figure out how you can have those deliberately and on purpose and planned and fully enjoyed rather than emotional. Like I have to have it. Like, you know, I just got to have my sweets. Like, I don't want you eating it out of desperation.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like saying, well, I'm not giving it up because I don't want to give up my happy. It's like, that's not what makes you happy.
Right.
You enjoy it and you can really enjoy it if you just start planning it and having it in a way that also gets you other goals too in the process.
Right. Right. And I have done some planning of it. And maybe I need to, tell me if this makes sense. What if I plan it every day for a while? Because I do that for a couple days and then I'm like, oh, I don't feel like having it today. So I stop planning it, but then I'll go and have 3 or 4 or something.
I would plan every single day.
Okay.
And then every single day you get one opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
All in or I'm all out.
Yep.
And when you say no, you're like, all right, I'll see you on the plan tomorrow, bud.
I like that. All right. I'll try that.
All right. Good call. That's a good question. I love coaching the Queen's Club. Oh God. Y'all ask so good questions. Just I feel like we get to work on another level.
All right, lady. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Miss Stephanie. You're next. Then I'm going to go sit on an ice block. I'm so hot, I'm getting red in the face. Like, seriously, guys, the sweat is pouring down. It gets so hot in here at night because I close the door. All right, so it's Join Audio or something. It's up around the bottom left. There you go. You got it.
Perfect.
What are we coaching on?
The main one that I wrote in for was regarding no flour, no sugar, but I also have had a lot of drama going on with my sister. So if we could talk about both issues, it would be amazing, but I get if there's not enough time or whatever.
Which one do you want to start with?
Let's do no flour, no sugar, because I think it'll be easier. Okay. So I am struggling with, like, I have joint problems. Like, they just get really sensitive and sore. And, like, I've got bursitis in my elbows and I've got just, like, a strained tendon in my knee. So I'm trying the no flour, no sugar. I tried it originally when we did it in the tribe, like, I don't know, last year sometime. And I found it was great. Like, it helped me. I found the biggest benefit when I went on the no sugar, no flour was that my cravings went down substantially for a lot of things. And I was even able to dial into the fact that, like, I would say, like, oh, man, I've been, like, having crazy cravings lately and I haven't had them in so long. And someone said, have you ate potatoes recently? And I was like, yes. They're like, potatoes can do it too. And it was just like, I was so dialed into my body and cravings and things like that. So, but to get there, I feel like I have to be perfect. No flour, no sugar. Because if I have exceptions, I find that my cravings come back and it's harder to read why I'm struggling, and then it becomes like a mental drama. So I know I'm trying to find that line between like the exception meals.
Why don't you just do an exception that doesn't have sugar and flour in it?
That's what I was wondering. Like, is that fine, or do I need to struggle through dealing with flour cravings every time I have an exception meal?
I don't think you have to. I think you just, like, you can look at it several different ways. You can look at it as, I mean, here's the thing, especially for those of you who are sensitive to sugar and flour. Like, I honestly happen to be one of the lucky ones who's not. I can take it or leave it. Like, I can have it and not have a craving for it and doesn't bother me. Other people, though, like, it, you know, it like lights you up. There is a chemical component to it.
Yeah.
And I just believe, like, if you don't want to deal with that chemical component, you're just like, you know what? I'm done. Like, that's fine. Mm-hmm. So I think that is a fine decision to not have it from that place. But if you're doing it because, like, I don't think you need to introduce, it'd be like saying, well, you know, I've been a drug addict before. Like, I used to snort cocaine all the time. And it's really uncomfortable if I snort a little. So I think I want to practice the discomfort of just having a little cocaine once a week, just to make sure that I'm not, you know, like, cutting it out of my life for a poor thought reason.
And that is kind of how I feel. Like, I feel like I struggle with addiction to flour, and like, I feel like my brain clears when I don't have it, and it feels freeing. And then when I, you know, try to have it put back in my plan, it's like, no, I just see every day. It's like, oh, I really want this. And it's like, yeah, it's because you had flour within the last couple of days. Like, of course you're going to crave it. Like, this is what happens every time. And I have to do the mental work of like, is this on my plan? Am I going to eat it? And just why create all the drama?
Well, and that's the thing. So you can decide if you want the drama around that or not. And it's not necessarily, I wouldn't even call it drama. I would just say, like, I know that when I include sugar and flour or flour, that I'm going to have physical cravings. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to need to manage my physical cravings. And mm-hmm. sometimes you may want to do that, mm-hmm. but I want you to do it from a place of, I choose to manage my physical cravings, not like, you know, oh, it's so hard. I wish I wasn't one of those people. And like, I don't want you doing all that doo-doo. Mm-hmm. But then you also can be the kind of person who's like, it's just not worth it. There are plenty of people who live in this world who never ever eat sugar and flour. And the last thing they ever think of is like, it's my burden. Like, they just don't even think about it. That's just not how they eat. It's mm-hmm. just like people who, you know, when they're like, well, I'm going to lose weight and I'm not going to be able to drink wine. There are just people in the world who don't like wine. And yep. they never sit around and think, you know, oh.
The amazing thing I found when I was following it strictly for like, I felt like didn't have any for like a whole month. And by the end of the month, where I used to say, like, I could not live my life without bread. By the end of the month, I was like, no, it's fine. You get into a new routine and you don't even think about it. It's just
if you focus on the other things you enjoy rather than focusing on what you can't have, it makes the process a lot easier. Mm-hmm. The thing I want to warn you about that you said in the very beginning is perfectionism. I have to be mm-hmm. perfect with it. Mm-hmm. You do not have to be perfect with it. You just have to manage it. It's just like anything. If you want to include it, include it. Here's what I want you to do. Just like anybody else, whether you're doing no sugar, no flour, or you're doing 2-2 or whatever, you plan and you follow your plan. Mm-hmm. And when you don't follow your plan, you do a recovery worksheet. You're no more special. Like, I'm going to tell you right now, the people that are doing 2-2, they have just as many urges and cravings, just as much perfectionism, just as much like, I feel like the second I eat over two, I can't stop. And it has nothing to do with a flour reaction. It's just it's always a mental, the mental part is always going to be driving the majority of it. Mm-hmm. Like the dopamine hit is a piece, but when you eat over a two and you like feeling satisfied, you're getting dopamine from that thought too. So it's like, you know, I would just watch for perfectionism and just say, there's no perfectionism here. I'm either eating it or I'm not. And the times I do eat it, I know clearly what I'm going to be dealing with. And I'm going to do my recovery worksheets. Or if I plan it, then I'm not going to have any drama. I'm going to probably feel a little crappy the next day and I'm going to want it. And I'm going to manage my mind around that because I'm going to make the choice to know that that's part of the currency of having it.
Yeah.
It's no different than when I want to drink 3 glasses of wine, the currency the next day is a fat headache. But every now and then I'm like, maul in on 3, planning ahead.
Yeah. So the other issue, so my sister and I have had like a more strained relationship as of late, and her boyfriend and I don't get along. And I've been doing a lot of like exercises around like talking to my accountability groups and trying to get my thoughts around the whole situation. There's a lot of blame, blaming, trying to get past back and forth. And I'm really trying to shut that down, at least on my end.
What's the problem? Why are you upset with your sister? What's going on with your sister?
That's a long story. So I
want the thought that's not working for you.
The thought that I have around my sister is that she's blaming me for her problems and her inability to take control and be responsible in her life.
Okay, then let her do that. Why do you have a problem with her doing that?
Because she and her boyfriend will verbally attack me and try to make me feel put down.
They cannot make you feel put down though. You're putting yourself down when you allow that. That's your fault, not theirs. They get to say anything they want to you, Stephanie.
But there is like where they find that snippet of truth and then it's hard. Like she's pregnant with his baby and I really want to be excited for her, you know, the new kid. Mm-hmm. And like she's even just talking lately, like she was just saying how she's so disappointed in me because with her first child and she had a second pregnancy, but it miscarried, like I was so excited. And then all the problems came and it's just our relationship isn't where it was.
But what is the snippet of truth?
That I'm not as excited for the baby and I wish I was, but there's so much drama between us all that there's so much resentment that I'm having a hard time letting go of. Cause every time I try to get more involved in their lives, I end up doing something that I get in trouble for. And then I have to hear them tearing me apart for 3 days.
Right. But here's the thing. They're not tearing you apart. They're giving you a lot of sentences. They're giving you their judgments and their opinions about you.
Yeah.
Unless you believe them, they can't tear you apart. The tearing apart is your action line. You know this, right?
Yeah.
So sister says, you're not excited about my baby and I don't like you for it. Whatever she says, right? So tell me something she has said that's like tears you apart. Give me a sentence that someone's given you.
Well, the most recent one was just that, like her boyfriend sent me a video of her crying and he said, like, this is why I don't care to try to have a relationship with you because this kind of shit keeps happening. And when I talk to my sister, she's like, yeah, it's because you're not excited about the new baby and everything has changed and it hurts me that you don't care like you used to.
Okay. So they say all of that. Let me ask you this. Are they entitled to their opinion?
Yeah.
You don't have to like their opinion, but they are entitled to it, right?
Yeah.
So what is your thought about their opinion? When they say all of that, what do you make that mean about you?
Well, a lot of it came from, like, I was trying to be helpful and a lot of the ways that I tried to help ended up backfiring. And so I've been getting blamed for, like, I helped her financially to buy a house and I helped her financially, like lending her money to buy a car through like a line of credit. And the house became a disaster. And
let me stop you right here. We're going to go back to the video and the words.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. They're blaming you for how you feel and you're blaming them for how you feel. No one's taking responsibility for their own damn emotions in this group. So you all have something in common. Yeah, everybody thinks everyone should feel just like them.
Yes, 100%. And that's what I'm saying. I've been trying to do thought work and I'm just like, I know I'm not where I need to be. Like, I've at least got to the point where I'm like, okay, I need to try to let their opinions be their opinions.
Right. But what could you make this video?
I wish I could have been more perfect and that every part that I played in the relationship dissolving is like, I do take responsibility for that part.
Not yet. Don't snow yourself. This is where the pain's coming in. You're telling yourself, but I'm taking responsibility, except for the fact I've done all these things and they say this shit and tear me apart. Mm-hmm. That's not taking responsibility for your part of the thing. Taking responsibility is like, I see why they sent me this video and I see why my sister's crying. This was totally my fault. I could have showed up in a different way. I have absolute empathy and compassion for why she's so upset and why he's mad at me. That's taking responsibility. It feels very different. It means you do not need to be right. Most of the time in relationships, especially in situations like this, you don't mind taking responsibility as long as everybody knows you were right, that you were perfect, that you showed up the way, like, but I bought this car and I did these things and like all this other stuff. Like, I'm the good one. I don't understand why they would think about, you know, do all this. This is not to make you feel bad. This is to raise your awareness of where your thoughts are lying right now. They have said all of these things. Your thought could be, I really don't appreciate the way he's talking to me, but I can also understand he's very upset because my sister is upset.
Mm-hmm. I understand that part. Like, I think the part that makes me sad right now is because, like, I don't know how to fix it.
You don't try to fix it.
But if I can't fix it, I can't change my thoughts around.
Yes, you can. You think that you've got to have them coming back to you with love in order for you to love them first. Somebody's going to have to step up to the plate in this relationship and be the first one to be wrong and the first one to love. That's true emotional adulthood. The best way to fix it is you get your brain straight around it. So that when, for the next 6 months, while she's pregnant and hormonal, and she thinks you're the devil, and you get to the point to where they can say and do whatever they want, and you choose to love her no matter what, just because she's your sister. And you can be like, I don't love the relationship as it is, but I'll never stop loving her. I'm always going to have absolute compassion for what their side of the story might be. It's where you drop into their, like, when you do models, do less models on you and do more models on where they're coming from. Figure out what their thoughts are. It allows you to kind of see, like, everybody's just working in an ineffective model right now. Somebody's got to step into the effective one.
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound like your sister and your sister's boyfriend are really great at thought work. So quit expecting them to rise above.
That's what I was like. I'm like, I'm doing all this thought work on my end and I feel like I am growing, but it's like, I just feel like it's stagnant on their end. And I'm like, can't we work as a friggin' team? Like, we're all unhappy with how it is.
But that's your painful thought. It's like, I'm doing all of this work. Like, I'm buying things and I'm doing thought work and I'm trying to love you and everything, but by God, I'm not going to be happy until you show me you're doing it too. It's like, no, that's not how relationships work.
Yeah. I don't know how to get there. Like, what you loving somebody without any appreciation returning is a hard friggin' thing. Like, I know you have, like you've said, that you have a very strained relationship with your parents and that you've had to go through a lot to just learn to love them. And I honestly, I'm struggling. I don't know how to love with being treated, you know, to a standard that I feel is like undeserved, you know, where I try and then to get yelled at for little things, it hurts. And I don't know how to rise above. Like, I don't know how to get there with the thought work. Like, how do I become this enlightened person that's like a Mother Teresa? Like, you can say shit to me and I'm just going to keep on loving. Like, I don't
you
know how
literally
to
have to watch your mind. Like, it literally is one of those things where you just have to say, like, when they say words to me and I feel hurt, you either need to say, I feel hurt because I choose hurt. You never get to say, they tear me apart. I want you to watch the call.
Yeah.
I want you to listen to how you describe the situation. Your model is...
I chose to allow to be hurt. They said.
Yeah, it's always like, it's Stephanie's pain is always on the feeling line. And the thought is always, it's caused by the sea. It's never Stephanie.
Right.
So here's how you evolve. Here's how you get to the Mother Teresa state like me. Oh my God. Like, I never thought that those two words might be in the same sentence, but let's put it this way.
Sorry, Kathy. I don't mean to make her.
She's not on the call. Thank God. Today I was on a call with her and she had her ashes on her head. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't even go to church. I totally forgot it was Ash Wednesday. Here's the deal. When you have hurt, you start really understanding relationships more when you're like, I don't tolerate this. I'm willing to love them, but this ain't right. And I'm hurt because I choose to be hurt. You never hand your emotional basket off to anyone else.
Yeah.
Because here's the deal. Some like this video and all these words and stuff. Like if I was the boyfriend and I had a pregnant ass girlfriend saying that her sister's a bitch and she's crying and everything, I'd probably lash at you too. You know what his model is? Not, I hate Stephanie. She's a terrible person. His model is, Stephanie broke my girlfriend and now he's panicked and angry.
But he has said those specific words. I hate Stephanie. She's a terrible person.
Okay. Like he said, but I want you to see why he might be there. He gets your sister's perspective. You want him to like you from your perspective. You know what he's doing? He's experiencing you through your sister. He's experiencing you through a lens of probably, what is he, 25, 30 years old?
He's 26, yeah.
26 years of life you've never lived. Mm-hmm. You have no idea how women were treated in his past. You have no idea what his filter and his lens is. Mm-hmm. But you're expecting him to have a perspective of you that you have and to show up in the world through your lens.
Yeah.
That's never going to happen.
The lens through my sister. And I think that's part of what hurts is the fact that she, like, if he thinks so badly about me, then it has to mean that she thinks so badly about me.
No, he sees your sister hurt and he automatically blames you.
Yeah.
Your sister could be having a bad day. Like, let me just tell you right now, like, if I met your sister, you know what my first thought would be? She's such a bitch. I swear to God. She must be a terrible sister because this girl's crying and she's buying her shit and doing all kinds of junk. And I don't know. I would never associate with some hoe like that. I'm experiencing your sister through your lens. And now he's experiencing you through, that's the thing. Is it true, everything I just said about your sister? Do you want me to walk around thinking that, like, she's a terrible person who is just so mean to her own sister and does all kinds of shit and blah, blah, blah?
No.
Right.
But then, like, where I would feel like there is a responsibility on me to correct that thought in you, to say, like, to stand up for you, to be like, no, where there's issues, like, there's still amazing things. Where I feel like that hasn't happened between, it's like, how can you look at our lives and look at the details of our lives? And me and my sister were so close, and how can you see how close we were and think that we are like terrible people to each other? Like, we were so close for so many years. And it's like, how can
you focus on that part of the relationship rather than focusing on this small part where you're not close? What, like, go back to your past and focus on all that was right and look at her through that lens. And it's just really, like, whatever's going on now.
There's so many issues with the boyfriend that I don't know how to overcome. Like, he doesn't want to be in the same room as me. I personally don't care to be in the same room as him, but he is like...
Well, then good. You both have your way.
No.
Why are you arguing to be in the same room with someone that you don't want to be in the same room with? Like, I want him to be in the same room with me, but I don't want to be in the same room with him.
My sister is demanding that we spend time together.
Okay, but then this is just where you say, like, look, I don't want to. I want to spend time with my sister.
And then she will say, if you love me, you wouldn't put up barriers against my boyfriend.
All right, so if you really loved your sister and she said all that, what would you say? Like, if you truly are coming at it from, like, a love place and you're not coming at it from a selfish place of, like, okay, come on now, you're tearing me apart.
Well, I've been trying to go to family dinners with him and things like that.
Okay, then what is the problem?
Because anytime that I'm not perfect, they blow up on me. Like, the last time, the last big drama event was he kept slapping her, kind of play fighting, but it was in front of my kids. And so I sent him a text the next day in the group chat. The group chat's the only way that we talk. And I said, like, you need to not do that kind of behavior in front of my kids. I don't like it. I don't think play fighting is appropriate in front of a two-year-old. I can't explain it to them.
So when you treat him like a two-year-old, I'm going to imagine that he didn't have the best reaction.
No, he didn't.
Told a grown ass adult about how they should be behaving.
Well, he
expect him to be like, "Oh, you're right.
Oh, no, I know."
Realize,
but then they go and they like. I'm talking like days, being like, "How all my many faults?" I'm like, "Yeah, no, I know I'm flawed. Like, I know that I'm not perfect.
Know though that you're flawed. You would understand. They're going to talk about it. That's your sister. That's who they are."
But now he doesn't want to be going to any family dinners. So now I'm the cause of the breaking up of the family because I said something about how his behavior needs to be different.
But it's
said,
true.
Or you cannot. But
we're arguing the truth. That's your pain. You are the cause. You sent a text to tell a grown-ass person how to behave. Mm-hmm. They had a reaction and you don't like it. Nobody likes it. Why not just own that and just be like, yeah. Like this is the thing, Stephanie. If you really feel strongly that he shouldn't act like that in front of your children, you should be like, I get it. You're upset and stuff, but I stand by my word. If this is what happens and you guys are going to blow up and everything, love you from afar. I'm still going to go to the family dinners by myself. I'll let you guys like work out your anger over there. This is not a Stephanie was right or wrong thing, but this is like what you have to see. You're creating the drama for Stephanie. Mm-hmm. Like, let me just plant something in your head. When you sent the text, you either really thought it was wrong and should never happen in front of your children. And this is like, this should be said, or you don't like him. And every time he proves you right on not liking him, this is your action line. You're sending these texts. You're either sent the text from a place of like, I care about my children and I have a boundary, or you sent the text because you don't like him and you're convincing yourself there's evidence and you wanted to get one in on him. Because here's the deal. Grownups usually don't like being told how to behave, period. Mm-hmm. So you can't expect that when you tell in a group text someone how they should have behaved the day before and that they were wrong, mm-hmm. that they'll be like, oh, thank God you're in my life.
No, and I agree with all that.
You really needed the like polite police around.
Yeah, no, I agree that I apologize that it could have been handled better because I know that where I feel like it was an issue that needed to be dealt with. Mm-hmm. I don't agree that I dealt with it in the right way. So I stand by, like, it needed to be, like, I do not want that kind of behavior going on in front of my kids, like hitting and slapping when I tell my two-year-old that she can't hit and slap. but I should have talked about it in a better way, maybe through my sister, maybe a private text, kinder words. Like, there's a lot of ways I could have handled it better.
Yeah.
Because I know that my hate of for him affects how I talk to him, because there is a level of like, I'm mad at him. I don't care about him. Like, he just makes problems in my life. And it comes out when I try to communicate, even like subconsciously, obviously I'm not trying to be like, ooh, I'm going to create drama for the next 3 days. Woo-hoo. Like, I can't wait.
But when you believe he makes problems in your life, like when your thought is he makes problems in my life, that's where your real problem is. He can't create problems. You're creating problems in your life by the way you think about him. He's not a problem. He is a human who does things in your sea line. The boyfriend is your sea line.
But trying to have boundaries creates problems with my sister, because she then tells me I'm not allowed to have boundaries.
Well, but she doesn't, that's not her like response. You get to have all the boundaries you want. She's just wrong on that one. But you also have to realize that when you set boundaries, she has a boundary. Her boundary is, I don't have to like them.
Mm-hmm.
The problem that you're having is you want to be right in this relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And when you let go of needing to be right and you just step back and you're just like when you say like, I can't have boundaries because she doesn't like them. It's like, no, you can have the boundaries all day long. You can't expect her though to want to like the things you want.
But I just don't know how to deal with the issues that resulted. Like, there was the issue where I said, like, after he went off on me, I said, okay, well, I like, if he's going to like verbally attack me, he's not allowed in the home. In my home specifically.
All right. That's your boundary, but you also get to take the fallout for your boundaries.
Yeah. But like my mother coming over and saying, I'm ruining Christmas because like I have a boundary now. It's unacceptable and I'm ruining the family. Like, I don't know how to deal with it.
She feels that way. Why are you upset at mom now? Like, your boundaries are for you. Your boundaries aren't for everyone to be like, I get it. You need them. Okay. Mm-hmm. Nobody likes boundaries. Usually the person setting them doesn't even like them.
No. Yeah.
And yet we all want them.
Uh-huh.
I just usually let people say whatever the fuck they want in my house. I don't give a shit. You should hear the batshit junk my mama says when she comes to visit me. I is like certifiable. I just laugh.
Yeah.
Just like when people were play fighting. You explained mm-hmm. it. Like, for me, I would have just been like, I would never, I just would have been like, you know what? I'm just going to let that roll. I can teach my 2-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not saying you're right or wrong on that one. I'm just giving you an example of like, when you're not looking for things to be so hot and heavy, you can kind of step back and understand when you're setting boundaries from true emotional violation, where someone's emotionally violating you, and when you are emotionally violating yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like to me in this situation, you need to do more work on Stephanie than you're doing on your thoughts about other people.
Mm-hmm.
Because what I'm noticing is like, I'm entitled to my boundaries and I'm entitled to all these things. And I don't understand why the rest of the world doesn't love them. Everyone's blaming me for all this stuff. And it's like, you haven't spent enough time thinking about what could their perspective be. I'm pretty sure your mom does think you're ruining Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
She is a mother. Mothers do not like it when their siblings don't get along, no matter how damn old you get. If y'all aren't speaking and she can't have all you little chicks there having fun and loving on each other, somebody's got to be to blame. Guess who the one who's going to be the blame is? The one with the boundary.
Yeah.
Always. Just always know the person with the boundary is always the a-hole. That's like, it's the golden rule.
Yeah. And that's why, like, we lifted the ban because I knew it was made out of anger. We allowed him back into the house and like I've been trying to work on, you know, like it's only going to make more issues the more I throw up walls. So like
and
that. Just,
and asking yourself, do I really need my walls?
Yeah.
Like, be willing to be wrong about him and your sister. Be willing to be wrong about your perspective. I love, that's one of the reasons why I've had such a big shift with my parents. Mm-hmm. There's always all kinds of truths we tell ourselves about stuff. When I decided I could be really wrong about my parents and how they raised me and what they did and didn't do for me and like things they said to me and stuff like that, it really allowed me to start truly seeing them in a new light and like truly for the first time in my life, loving them. Like I didn't love my parents probably until my mid-30s. And I'll be real honest about that. My mom would die if she ever heard some of these coaching calls.
Yeah.
And it was because I started really looking at it from their perspective versus just mine. And I think that's kind of like going to be good for you is to think like, okay, I'm going to watch this call and I'm going to listen to myself talk about everyone, but I'm going to watch how I talk about them.
I think the idea behind that terrifies me because if they hate me so much and I can see it from their perspective and it makes them right, then I'm a terrible person.
I don't think they hate you. You know what I think? I think they don't like the way you act, which is exactly the same problem you're having with them. I don't think anyone hate. Let me tell you how I know your sister doesn't hate you and how I know your mother doesn't, like no one's hating you because you're all still arguing. We only argue with people we love. She just wants you to change. Just like you just want her to change. You know who we want to change in the world? People we care about.
Yeah.
If we don't care about them, we don't give a fuck if they change. We're like, go. Like, go be your mess somewhere else. I don't need that. But you all love each other so much, and that's why you're so hot and heavy, and why you're so invested, and why you want boundaries. And you all think you need to protect each other because love needs protecting. Hate doesn't.
Yeah.
So you can hang on to that piece.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right.
I know it. And you got to like do models with that boyfriend in that sea line and you got to get him neutral. He cannot be a-hole boyfriend. And that is who is in your sea line right now.
Oh my God. There are so many more expletives before that.
What is his name?
Perry.
Harry?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. He's got an old man name for a 26-year-old, right?
Yeah, he fucking does.
So sea line can be Harry.
Perry with a P.
No, Perry. I thought you said Harry. Perry. And the thought could just be, my sister loves him. Yeah. My sister's having a baby by him. You do not need to be like, Perry is amazing. Perry's the one. You don't need to do all that. Right now, we just need to get to, that's the person my sister's with right now. That is the person my sister has chosen. He's going to be the father of my niece or nephew. Whatever that is, you have to start there. And it will help you chart where you want to go from here.
Okay.
All right, lady. You got your work. And you got all the coaching tonight. So we're going to not eat sugar and flour. We're going to repair our relationship with Perry. We're going to really embrace the idea that the reason why all of this is contentious is because you all love each other so much, not because people hate you and that you're not perfect. Everybody just wants everybody to act the way they want because life would be easier if we all did that.
All right. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Hey, did you ever get your honey dill sauce I sent you?
I ate all of that. Did you send that?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, that was the best
for like 10 months.
Oh my God. Like it didn't last long either. I put it on, I had grilled chicken and then I had, I put it in my salads.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a delicious salad dressing.
And you can just make it really easy with just mayo, honey, and dill. It's legit three
honey, ingredients. Seriously, is that all it is?
It is, yeah. Manitoba, that's what we make. It's just, yeah, mayo, honey, dill. You can look that up. Super easy to make.
Oh, it was so good.
That was the first coaching call, and you got mad at me for getting mad at my husband for ruining the honey dill sauce. And you were like, what is that?
That's hilarious. See, we continue to coach on your idea that people should just behave the way you think they should.
If they just were perfect.
If everybody else was perfect, then I would be perfect. That's all we need in this world. All right, lady. You have a good one.
You too.
All right, bye.
Bye.
All right, queens. It was a good call, y'all. Hope you have a good one. I'm retiring for the night. I don't even think I've been working on web pages and stuff. I can't even look at them no more. So I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.